Hey everyone, welcome to Seen That, the podcast where we talk about cult and classic movies we haven't seen until now. In this week's episode, we're discussing The Exorcist and why Avril...
The power of Christ compels you!
All right, bye. And why Avril hasn't seen that, and much, much more. Hope you all enjoy. So happy, I think today is the first day of spring.
It was like Friday or yesterday or today, one of the most recent days.
Sometime this weekend was the first day of spring. And I'm really feeling it. Like, it's beautiful out. Currently, it's like 60 degrees. I went on a long walk this morning. It was so nice. And like this feeling of like, you know, warmer weather is in the air. It's just... such a nice change from all the like cold and like being isolated and inside. So really? I am in a great mood today.
I am as well. Yeah, I got my vitamin D. And for those that maybe are listening abroad or on another side of the country, we're again in Boston and New York respectively. And we've just gotten through winter. So for us, spring is a big fucking deal.
Yeah, we're super excited. I just did like spring cleaning. It was a whole thing. So yeah, we're excited for the seasons to change. We like that up here in the Northeast
that we do.
The United States. So also this weekend, amidst all the like fun with the new weather and everything, I sat down with David and watched the new Justice League that came out or that was released on HBO Max. And I wanted to just quickly talk about it in our chat segment because it kind of relates to our Wonder Woman episode. And just I feel like we've talked about like Batman and things like that. So I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen a worse movie, and you guys know that we've seen The Room on this podcast, so I am just appalled at it, honestly, and it just truly is, I don't understand how people, like, that is such a waste of money. I mean, I don't know, but anyway.
Can I ask a question? So, I've never seen Justice League, and I don't get the sense you want to do that on this show as an episode.
We could.
But... is this version just extended, or is it a totally different movie within the universe?
Sort of both. I mean, because no, it is the same like plot a little bit. But basically, like, one director shot this whole thing, and then
Zack Snyder,
and then due to like, you know, conflicts with the studio, and then also a personal tragedy, he decided to step back from the project. So when they were editing it, they brought in this other director, and they had to reshoot a bunch of it because Zack Snyder's version was kind of too long. It didn't really make sense. So they released the old Justice League. I'm not actually sure when that came out, but they released the like official one, by Joss Whedon, and that, you know, people were very disappointed by that. Also, I didn't see that when it first came out, but people were disappointed by that. And so David was like kind of interested to watch this one, and I hadn't seen the other one. So we actually like did this thing where we watched the new Justice League that came out is like 4 hours long. It's insane.
Oh my God.
So we did this thing where we watched it in segments. I mean, it's divided up into parts. And then we also, like, went back to the original and we're, like, watching the segments that pertain to, like, those sections. So, anyway, it is just... there's a lot. And this is a whole other episode we would probably do. Like, there's enough for me to say about it to, like, fill an episode. But I just... feel like I wanted to like note that I don't know what to make of it. I mean, it's a little nuts, and I just think everyone needs to calm down about the first version being so terrible, because I was like, I mean, if that's what they had to work with, I'm impressed that they pulled that out of their ass. So anyway.
Do we think this is like a cash cow, but like for streaming, like people are still at home. Let's just put this out because we know people will watch it.
Yeah, probably. And they're trying to be like the new Marvel, which also with Marvel, this new show, I don't know why I forgot what it was called. It might be called Falcon and Winter Soldier.
That's a show? I thought it was a movie.
No, it's a show. Oh. So basically that's going to be the new what's to be or what was WandaVision coming out every Friday. And the first episode was great. I mean, it had emotion that Justice League didn't have. It had plots that Justice League didn't have. It had character development and character interaction that Justice League didn't have. I mean, the new Justice League basically doesn't have any like
dialogue.
I just like the heroes. It's supposed to be like the heroes working together. The League of Heroes, right? And none of them like talk to each other like barely at all. So you're like, what? It's just weird. Anyway, I will get off my soapbox on that, but I felt like I needed to mention it because it's about movies and we'd watched Wonder Woman. And then I also wanted to bring in that I think it's definitely worse than The Room. So just want that on record.
Hot take. I have a feeling a lot of people have that same opinion. So I think you're in the majority there. And I thank you actually for mentioning this because I have now less than zero. I have like -100 desire to see this movie.
It's like you could rent something else and enjoy yourself more. Yeah, for sure.
It just, I know I don't love action movies as we've explained and talked about.
Yeah.
But this movie does seem like it's just special effects scene after special effects scene, action scene after action scene.
And they're
scene.
Not even good. I mean, remember when we were talking about Wonder Woman and the slow-mo? Yeah. Like, it's all that and then, like, a lot of bad CG. And it's just a lot.
Yeah.
So, don't really know how to segue from that to our current movie, except for, I guess, just saying I think that this is much better than Justice League. They're not in the same universe at all. But this week, you guys, we are talking about The Exorcist. And just some quick facts about the movie. It was released the 26th of December, 1973.
Merry Christmas.
Which, or Happy New Year, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought that was interesting because I feel like, I don't know when it changed, but I feel like in recent years, horror movies that particularly involve religious like iconography and just anything to do with the church or nuns or the devil at all, I feel like it comes out around Easter. So I just found that interesting that it came out on December 26th. So that was an interesting tidbit. It had a budget of $11 million and opening weekend grossed $8.1 million and has since obviously surpassed that. But apparently it took twice as long to film because like half the set burned down and then like it was twice as expensive. But people were like flocking to it, mm-hmm. waiting in the cold in, you know, winter weather to go see it in long lines. So and it kind of like wasn't released everywhere. It was kind of a limited release. So that just shows you how like kind of big and like instantaneously this movie was like just sort of a hit and very hot button. The director was William Friedkin and the writer was William Peter Blatty. And he also wrote the novel that this screenplay was adapted from. It stars Ellen Burstyn as Chris McNeil, who is the mom. Max von Sydow, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, as Father Marin. Jason Miller as Father Karras and Linda Blair as Reagan McNeil, the daughter. So I streamed this on Vudu, and I think it also said on Amazon Prime it was available if you have Amazon Prime Video. I don't know where you streamed it at.
HBO Max.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, it's available on – you can find it pretty much on any platform, you guys. And then a quick summary. All hell breaks loose, pun intended, when Reagan McNeil, the daughter of a famous film star, gets possessed by a demon. Her mother, disturbed by her daughter's actions, seeks the help of two priests to perform an exorcism and rid Reagan of the monster living inside her. I wrote that, by the way. I felt really proud of that.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Okay, sorry. I started trying to write my own little summaries because I feel like they're a little better than what we find.
That's a really good idea, and that's very well written, so great job. We should start doing that.
I wanted to start with the all hell.
I love that.
Okay. Okay, so getting into it now. Avril, I'm not that surprised, just like Indiana Jones, that you hadn't seen it, just because I don't know you to be one who flocks to horror films. However, I do know you as a person that likes to watch classic films just to, like, you know, have that in your repertoire and understand what's been in, you know, pop culture and things like that. So, and I would absolutely consider this a classic. So, Avril, why hadn't you seen that?
So I would actually say I am a horror fan and I do like to watch horror movies.
Oh, okay.
And that's been a more recent, rather, like, in high school I started to dabble, and then my interest got more and more heavy in college and very much so post-college. So, but that being said, I was always too scared to see this. So call me a scaredy cat, call me a hypocrite, I don't care. I was scared and I avoided this literally until now. So that's the main reason why. And even though I wasn't raised religiously and I don't identify as religious now, knowing that the Catholic Church plays a major role in this and it's literally about an exorcism, that added to the horror, the terror about it. Because I was like, I don't know what happens during that. And it looks scary and freaky. And just there was so much I didn't know that I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to see it, and I didn't want to have to be freaked out. And even though it was like offered up in, you know, like with boyfriends, they'd be like, do you want to watch this? And I'd be like, let's watch something else. Down for a scary movie, but not this one. Or watching a scary movie with friends, I'd be like, let's watch something else. So I would always try to avoid it. Mm. And, you know, now I've seen it. I've faced my own demon in this regard. And I really am glad that I've seen it because I really, really liked this movie a lot.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you say that because even, you know, I'm not a Catholic, but I my parents were raised Catholic and I grew up going to church. I'm an Episcopalian. They're a little bit like looser, much looser than the Catholics. But anyway, so, you know, growing up going to church, I guess I never like associate it with my church experience. So it's interesting that you know, would put that together. But I guess, yeah, for people who grew up going to church and I don't know in the Catholic Church if they truly, like, you know, teach people a lot about exorcisms. I know, like, in my, like, Sunday school classes, they weren't, like, really going into that. So I don't really know how much, like, even Catholics know about it. But
Well, even in the movie, they're kind of like, this is like, wait, never done.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, is that a true thing? And we will definitely get into this. But I also had been too scared to see it. And then one night with David, like a number of years ago, we were like, let's watch it. Or maybe I made him watch it during the day or something. But I was like, let's watch it. Like, we finally have to do it because it's one of those things where, like, people just, you know it because people just build it up.
Oh yeah.
And like, I knew from my sisters and my mom, I feel like my mom always is like, oh my God, that's like the scariest movie I've ever seen, which we'll comment on in a little bit. I want to get to that. But I feel like being too scared to see it is definitely something I also felt before I had seen this.
And I think that speaks to how it's aged as a horror movie. The fact that 40, 50, whatever amount of time, years later, like the fact that it still holds up, I would argue, as an effective horror movie. And it has this lore of like being so scary.
Yeah, there's a lore around it, which is so fascinating.
The lore is almost more scary than the actual movie, yeah, I would argue.
I think so. I would agree. I would definitely agree with that. So what did you know about it before you watched it? I know you were like, you understood that it was about an exorcism and knew that sort of the church was involved. But beyond that, like, what kind of things maybe had you picked up on before you'd seen it?
So a lot of the scariest or scarier scenes get played in, you know, montages on TV shows, like the 100 scariest movies of all time, and like Exorcist is up there. So I've seen a lot of, you know, those scenes in Reagan's room where she's possessed, and it's really towards the end of the movie. So that was sort of the impression I had. I'm like, this movie is just all taking place in her bedroom, and it's a 2-hour long movie of them performing this exorcist. That's what I thought it was going to be about. Because that's all I had really seen. Mm-hmm. I had no idea there was any involvement in Northern Iraq with Father Marin. Is that how you say his name?
Yes. Also, I was like, are we back in...
I was like, Indiana
Raiders
Jones?
Of the Lost Ark?
Yeah, I was like...
I was like, did I press the wrong movie?
Where I was like...
I had forgotten that it started with that as well. So I was like, wait, what?
Thrown off with the call to prayer. I'm like... I literally paused it. I'm like, I'm watching the right movie, right? Did I select like The Exorcist 3 or something? I didn't know that was in it. I didn't know that Damien's loss of faith is because of his mom dying and he blames himself for that. I had no idea about that plot line. The x-ray scenes, which I think we should talk about later.
I had no idea
those were in it and that even happened. So really my only impression is that this movie is one of the scariest movies. It's about an exorcist. What I had seen of it was just those last scenes at the end, really, which doesn't give the full picture. And that's not the full story. That's part of it. And that's the main part of it, but that's not everything. And also that it was, you know, filmed and takes place in Georgetown. But that was really it. And that I had heard that, you know, people had vomited and fainted and, you know, were physically ill seeing this movie in theaters when it came out. So that sort of added again to the lore, to the like, oh my god, this movie must be absolutely horrific to watch. One more thing, I did know the ending going into this movie. Someone had spoiled it for me a couple years ago.
But
it did not, it was still so effective. Like, it did not ruin anything for me, because again, there was still so much I didn't know about the movie that even knowing that part, I kind of forgot about it watching the movie. And I was still just as sort of thrown, scared along for the ride when it happened. But I did know that going in, and that didn't even matter, because I was just like, holy shit, this movie is gonna, like, you know, make me shit myself. Like, it's just.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you ever got these texts, but they scared the shit out of me growing up. Do you remember those? They weren't group texts, but they were clearly like spam, and they weren't real. But I think they got like sent out to a bunch of people. And it was like back when flip phones were a thing, and like we didn't have smartphones, but it would be a multimedia message, and it would be this really pixelated and sort of blurryish photo of Reagan, but no context. So it's just like you're seeing this deformed or like very scary looking person. And like the text would read, you've got 7 days to respond to this or you will die. Like shit.
Wait,
like that.
Was that people like forwarding it to you? Because I'm like, I don't remember getting that from like any random numbers.
Yes, sorry. You're right. So like people, it was kind of
I was like, who was blackmailing you?
I did some things.
I was like, this is like all of a sudden Pretty Little Liars.
I did some things in my childhood, Haley. I can't disclose. No, But I remember, like, we would send that shit around, and it was so scary to me, because at that point I was like 10 and I didn't know that was from that movie. So I'm like, that was sort of my first inkling into this film, and like that was so terrifying. So I just wanted to mention that. I don't mean to like dredge up any bad memories for people if you also received those, but they were really, really frightening.
You know, now that you've seen it, what do you think of it? What was your experience watching it?
It wasn't also, for our viewers, for our listeners, I texted Haley moments before watching this, and I literally said, I'm so scared.
And I was like, you'll be fine, because I was currently watching it last night.
Yeah, and you were
you'll be fine. Don't worry.
Typical me, I get scared of the idea of watching a horror movie, and then I still want to, so I go ahead and I watch it. And during the fact, I'm like, this is scary, but like, I can handle this. And it's after the fact. It's when I've seen the film and I'm alone, and I now live alone, that shit really starts to take a hold on me psychologically. And I wasn't as scared watching it as I thought I would be, but I was definitely freaked out after the fact.
Oh, you were?
I was. Okay. And I'll explain more on that later. But with that being said, I kind of love that I was freaked out after. So that makes me really like this movie. And I completely agree that I get why this is a classic. It's really well shot. It's well edited. I mean, you can notice some flubs here and there, but like for its time, this is a really great movie. And I get why, from what I researched, like I think it was selected to be in like the National Film Registry or something.
Yes, I think it's now in like the Library of Congress in that National Film Registry.
People, critics regard this, some critics regard this as like the greatest horror movie ever or one of the best. So I completely agree with that and I would stand with them on that. And as I maybe mentioned earlier, I was really pleasantly surprised and scared, but more pleasantly surprised than not, of that it's not just all these scary scenes I had known before, that there's way more of a story here. And it's sort of a slow burn. It's really sort of that like third or fourth act that the real kind of crazy scariness ramps up. But I appreciated that it's the scary stuff is sort of interspersed between sort of calmer and less overt scary scenes and moments in the film. So I really liked the pacing of it. And I loved how it was shot. I mean, like the shots of Northern Iraq and of Georgetown. I mean, it looks beautiful. And I appreciated that it was all on site, on location, which like you don't always get that anymore because it's too expensive or it's just not convenient, whatever the reason. So that was nice too. Overall, I really, really like this movie. I don't know if I love it just because it did scare me so much, but I will definitely rewatch. And I'm sure in time I will grow to love it because I know there's more things I missed that on next viewings I'll probably pick up on. And maybe if I watch the other Exorcist movies, because I haven't seen any of the other films.
I haven't seen any of the other ones either.
Those might make me appreciate this even more. But coming away just the first time seeing it, I was really like pleasantly surprised again and kind of like, wow, how come I waited so long to see this? Because this is really great.
Yeah, so you mentioned being scared after and then being able to, like, maybe handle it a little bit during. I was not as scared watching it as I thought I would be the first time I'd seen it. So I'm curious, you know, I guess just talk a little bit about that. Like, were you as scared as you thought you'd be, or were you expecting to be scared after? And basically, what was your like afraid level during and then after? And then I guess just kind of speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So I don't know if you felt this way, but I definitely think for better or for worse, I was desensitized to a lot of those visually frightening scenes with Reagan, especially towards the end of the movie, because I'd already seen those so much that it's like, those are frightening, but I'm not like covering my eyes or covering my ears.
Exactly.
It's like, this is disturbing, but like I can handle it. It's the stuff that I didn't see coming, like the X-ray scenes, which were honestly, I thought the most disturbing. So it was shit like that, that I was not prepared for and very uncomfortable and scared by. Ironically so, because like I don't think that was intended to be scary, and I was really freaked out by that.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie to me is a little bit more like disturbing overall versus like scary. Again, I think I've mentioned on this podcast, like when I'm watching something scary, I am cowering behind a pillow. So the like whole buildup of like, oh my God, it's like the best horror movie. It's so scary. I was like, kind of similar to Alien, but I think I was more scared watching this than when I watched Alien. But, like, the first time, obviously. But, yeah, I was like, oh, this is more just like I want to like look away because there are disturbing things on the screen, like the makeup or how she's like her voice and the
her vomiting.
How she's, oh my god, it's yeah, gross. And the yeah, it like kind of, how she's like turning her head.
It kind of reminded me though, the vomit reminded me of the goo or the slime from Nickelodeon.
I literally wrote, I was like, they literally have Nickelodeon slime yeah. coming out of her mouth. Like, I was like, everyone, every kid born past like 1993 maybe is going to like recognize, or like before maybe 1997 is going to recognize, oh, what that is. So I just thought that was funny, actually.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be more scared watching at even the scenes I knew were coming. And so those sort of hit and were effective. But again, I wasn't cowering in fear. It was the scenes I didn't expect to come that were very effective on me and did freak me out. But really, it was after the fact when, and I stupidly did this to myself. I'm watching this movie late at night. I'm alone. And, you know, my apartment is small. So, like, I know where everything is. It's not like there's, like, tons of rooms for, like, people to be in or whatever the fuck, but I just let the movie sit with me. And even though I was watching, after I finished the movie, I was watching stand-up on YouTube. I was watching bloopers from my favorite shows. Mm-hmm. I was trying to watch anything light and funny,
like lighten the mood,
to like sort of help water down what I had just consumed. And it kind of worked, but not completely, because I was very much awake at like 3 a.m.
Oh no. And you should have texted me.
I was pretty freaked. I was just like thinking of Reagan's face as she's possessed. I was, you know, just like thinking through all of those, you know, really kind of stark images from the movie that are really frightening. And those stuck with me late into the night. And I, you know, made it through. I'm still here now and it's daylight. And I'm glad we're talking about this during the day. But
yeah,
I, you know, that can happen to me. Sometimes I watch a horror movie and I'm like, I'm fine. Again, it's like I don't like being scared like that. I don't like that I can get so freaked out after seeing something. Some might consider that like, maybe don't do that to yourself. And I can understand that argument. But I would also say, on the other hand, that shows,
yeah, how impactful it
can
be.
The fact that I was so freaked out after watching it, that, you know, that to me makes me like the movie more, which is probably a weird masochistic thing. But
no,
it made me appreciate it even more.
Yeah, I don't know if I had like a weird thing after I watched this one, but there's definitely been movies and even shows like Hill House where like I watch it and then I'm like messed up for days. I mean, I remember, and this movie isn't even like a great movie, but did we ever go see Prom Night, that horror movie together? Not the original,
no,
the
we
like
saw
new
that in theaters.
Ish one with Brittany Snow.
Yeah.
So I remember like going to see that with you guys, and I think it was like a bunch of our friends, and then someone's parent like dropped me back off at my dad's house. And for those who don't know, like my dad's house always had a lot of people in it. It was like me and my sister, if we were there that weekend, and then my 2 to 3 stepsisters, depending on if, you know, my older sister was home from college, and then my parents and whatever. So, like, there was always a lot of people over, or, like, whoever's friends might be over that weekend. So I get dropped off. And in the beginning of Prom Night, Brittany Snow gets dropped off from, like, a night with her friends, and she goes in her house, and she's like, hello? Hello? And like no one is there. And like they're all like dead under the couch, right? So
oh my god, that's right.
That's like the first scene in the movie. I'm not spoiling it. So then I'm like, so I go in, I'm like, I've just seen this movie. It's still during the day, but I'm like, hello? Hey, I'm home. Like, and I'm like, okay, like maybe they're in the backyard. No one is answering me. I don't even see, we have 2 cats and a dog. I don't even see them come to the door. Like, which was weird because they would used to do that. Like, Ruber used to bark at the mailman and, like, all this stuff.
Oh my
so
God.
I am like, okay, like, I know this probably isn't real, but I'm like, okay, like, what's happening? So I'm, like, looking through everything. I don't see anything. And I'm, like, too afraid to look underneath beds and under the couch. So then I'm
fair.
Like, okay. Then I'm like, okay, they're probably, they're probably somewhere. Like, they're probably, you know, I'll call them. No one answers their phone. Like,
of course.
Like, three or four people I called. And then all of a sudden, of course, everyone is fine, luckily. But they all come, like, skipping down the street. They were like, oh, we went out to get ice cream. And I was like, you can't. Like, I went to see this horror movie, and, like, you should have been here. I was like, I thought everyone was dead. I was, like, practically crying. They were like, okay, that's fun. And I was like, all right, well. But, yeah, I feel like sometimes the after experience of watching something kind of just helps you make just it builds up that movie in your mind. And also, like, I guess just helps speak to the impact of that film and, like, the lingering emotions it has.
Exactly. I sort of similar, and I don't think this happened. Maybe it did after we saw Prom Night. But just in general, after I'd watch a scary movie, either, like, with friends or on my own, back when we both were living in our hometown, my house was very old, Victorian era. So, yes. Like, wooden stairs and wooden paneling. And so you could just literally...
It, like...
Echo chamber. Like, you could hear everything in that house.
It, like... if it wasn't beautifully decorated, which it was.
Well, thank you.
It, like, if it was, like, run down and, like, you know, like, paint was chipping. Like, if that was the case, it would have been, like... It's one of those houses, you guys, where, like, it would have been the haunted house in town if, like, Avril's parents hadn't, like, taken such good care of it. But, yeah, like, beautiful gardens, everything. But, like, you know, it was an old Victorian, so there is that.
Thank you. That was very sweet. And I agree. but, yeah, I would say picture Norman Bates Hotel. That's what it looked like.
Yes.
On the outside, not inside.
Yeah.
Anyway. I would easily get freaked out by the creaking stairs and just how old the house was, that I would often make it known that I was walking up the stairs, and I would feel free to go into my parents' room and wake them up to be like, I'm scared. I can't imagine walking into an empty house after having just seen a scary movie where the protagonist walks into an empty house and everyone's dead. I'd be so scared.
I know. It's like ridiculous. I mean, did you do that thing too where, like, if you went down into, like, the basement, or if you were coming up, like, the last one upstairs, you had to, like, turn the lights off? Like, it was such a weird thing where it'd be like, if you, like, turn the light off behind you and there was, like, a staircase behind you, I would, like, run up the stairs, because I'm like, it's just so weird to, like, know that, like, there's, like, a dark basement behind you or something like that.
My sister can attest, our basement in our home, again, when we were growing up, was the scariest thing. We had, and she reminded me of this the other day, we had, I forget what they're called, but they're basically these old glass, not canisters, but holders of, like, a chemical substance. That if there's, what? Like, a fire, and this is back in the olden days, so, like, Victorian era or whatever, like, early 1900s, you would take it out of its holder, because it was, like, aligned along the wall in our basement. You take it out of its holder, and you, like, smash it against the fire, and it's supposed to, like, diffuse. And they were this red-orange color that...
Oh, my God.
As a kid, walking up our creaky basement stairs, you'd see them, and I was just like, that's blood. My mind would just... Run the gamut.
Or, like, something floating in formaldehyde. Yeah. Like, ugh.
It was, our basement was so scary. I hated it. Even in the daylight, it really just, it wasn't like a place we went to, like, go hang out. Like, your basement at your dad's was the place to hang, as we've mentioned in other episodes. Like, that was a fun, cool area. My basement, the exact opposite. Like, picture Blair Witch Project. When they're going through that house, like, my basement.
Oh, my, like, God. But I've actually never seen that, but I know, love the vibe.
It just wasn't suitable. Because the house was so old, it just wasn't suitable to, like, sort of renovate and make more inviting. So we just kind of made it a storage space for a lot of stuff, like seasonal things and furniture. Mm-hmm. But it also was, like, where the boiler was and where the furnace was. And there was a toilet there that scared the shit out of me. No pun intended. Because no one used it. And it was just, like, things like that, that as a kid, even as a teenager, you're like, I don't know what this is, and it just looks weird, and it scares me, and your mind just goes crazy.
Yeah, basements and attics. I mean, eesh.
Oh, yeah. Our attic was You know what? I'll talk about my house some other episode because okay. I have a lot. I have a lot of.
We'll do a Cribs episode. So it's safe to say that you were not then let down by the like horror experience.
Oh no. Okay. Very much. And again, I think that goes to if it was just like from the get-go, scary thing after scary thing after scary thing, I think I would have sort of become tired of that, honestly. It's like...
Yeah, like too many jump scares. Yeah. I appreciated that there wasn't many, but same. I think I was expecting that. When everyone's telling you, again, that it's like the scariest movie of all time, you're like...
Well, I think... Again, I haven't seen the other Exorcist movies. I know you haven't. I get the impression a lot of the later iterations, you know, the sequels have a lot of those jump cuts and you know, cliched techniques that horror movies use to like make you scared that I do actually think are counterproductive. I don't actually think they're scary because they're just so overused. So as a viewer, you're kind of waiting for that. And so if you're anticipating it, you're not as scared. That's the whole point. You need to like build dread and let the viewer not anticipate. You want them to not be sure of what's going to happen next. And I really liked that for the first hour, really, there isn't a lot of overt scary things, but there's creepy, mysterious stuff going on. And that, to me, really helps build then the terror that you see and the horror that you see at the end of the movie.
I know you mentioned that you didn't know that there was, like, you know, those other plot lines in the movie, like, you know, Demi and his mother and everything. Did you like that all that was in there? Did you think it, like, added or subtracted from, you know, your viewing experience?
No, I thought it completely added. And I think it's almost a shame that I think other horror movies, again, I don't know if this is the case with the sequels in this franchise, but I know with others, it's like, if it's just if you give so little background to a character, there's only so much that I can invest in them when it comes to either being sad for them or scared for them or scared with them or having any sort of empathy outreach. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was really, again, pleasantly blown away by how much of a backstory Damien gets. Like, he's losing his faith because of his mom dying, and I didn't even know she was a character in the movie, and that Reagan, when she's being possessed, uses that guilt that he has against him. Like, I thought that was ingenious. Side note, correct me if I'm wrong, if you know, I didn't think priests could drink. And there's a lot of scenes with Damien and other priests drinking.
I feel like that... Well, they actually can because every...
I mean, I know they drink wine at service.
Yeah. Yeah. But... That's what I was going to say. They do drink wine at service.
I thought that was like the only exception.
Okay. I don't know enough about this to like really speak on it, but
I think... But you call yourself Episcopalian?
Well, I know our... I know our... who we call rectors, they do... They're allowed to drink, and in Episcopalianism, they're allowed to be women and also gay and whatever. So that's a little bit more open again than the Catholic Church. But I forget what like station it is, but there is maybe some station, or maybe it was like back a long time ago when like you weren't allowed to drink, or like maybe if you're going to like a monastery or something. I know there you're like. Supposed to be celibate, but I feel like it comes with the territory, the not drinking, but I actually don't know if that ever was a rule or if that was like sometimes a rule, but again, I don't know for sure.
Maybe I'm conflating it or just confusing it with the celibacy. Maybe there's no rule at all.
But I feel like maybe there is, I don't know. Maybe we'll have an answer for you next week. We'll like look up on that. There was a lot to look up for this episode. I went on a many deep dives.
Also, I would argue Damien Carcass is the original hot priest.
Is a hot priest?
Have you seen Fleabag season 2?
Oh, no, I heard that. No, I haven't. But yes, someone I know was the hot priest for Halloween one time. And I was like, that is actually really funny, but I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, I will have to watch that. But yeah,
please watch that. It's such a good show. The whole series.
Yeah, he was very... Well, okay, so they wanted to actually cast Marlon Brando as
I read that.
Dr. Karras or Father Karras.
They wanted a lot of high profile actors.
Yeah, originally. They wanted like Audrey Hepburn, and she was like, "Can you film it in Rome?" And they were like, "No, it's too expensive." But they like ended up going with a lot of unknowns, and which I think it doesn't subtract from the movie at all. I think it may add to it. It's sort of like you just are really focused on the characters and their storylines, not like. Oh, because a reason why the studio actually didn't want Brando, or maybe the director didn't want him, was that it was going to be like a Brando film.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I did appreciate, yeah, like you said, that they added a lot to these characters.
I do think them giving backstory to these characters adds to the movie. It doesn't take away. And it lets me, as a viewer, as an audience member, be that much more invested and be more scared, more whatever, of their feeling in the moment, because I can have a better understanding of who they are. Like, I really was afraid that, again, I wasn't going to get any scenes with Reagan just being herself, being a 12-year-old kid, not possessed, happy for the most part, or maybe she wasn't going to be happy, but just her as herself. And I'm really glad that, again, for most of the first hour, she is. And
yeah, it's like, I think you need to see that contrast for sure.
And that's definitely, yeah, intentional, because then it does make you feel that much more sympathy for the mother who's going through this. And for her, when she's finally back to normal, it pulls on your heartstrings, and it's effective. But I think that's all necessary to make this movie what it is.
Yeah. What did you think of Chris? What did you think of how... you know, of her character, and I guess, like, would you have gone through those same motions of, you know, how would you have reacted if your daughter was maybe possessed?
Oh my God. I don't know. The fact that she, again, I also really liked that it's, the exorcism is a last resort, and she's so desperate. Yeah. And absolutely at her wit's end, that even an hour before, she's like, you know, would never consider that. She didn't even really know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to that point in the movie, she's like, you need to help me to Father Karras. So I can understand having exhausted all of your resources and then just literally trying out whatever you think might work. I really liked that she... you know, as I think most people would, it's like, what's something might be physically wrong. So let's take you to a doctor and like check that out.
Right.
And then, you know, having her go to a psychiatrist, like I like that they sort of check off all the usual suspects in terms of, you know, medical attention needed for something like this, and that the exorcist or the exorcism is literally last on the list.
Yeah, I did appreciate that, too. It felt like a real reaction. I feel like sometimes, I think we've said it before, but in movies, it's like, oh, really? They're going to jump to this? Or like, they didn't even go, they didn't even entertain that? Or like, okay, is no one questioning? Da, 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 da. So like, I did find that really realistic. One thing, though, and I did know, I want to know if you like picked up on it. I did find it weird that whoever wrote this was like, yeah, the doctors are going to recommend the exorcism.
Yeah, I was like, that
felt a little weird. I was like, I don't think a hospital full of doctors would be like, let's get the board together and we're going to like, our professional opinion is that you should definitely call a priest. Like, what?
But on the other hand, I also completely sympathized with Chris in that I wouldn't want my daughter to be put into... an institution, as they call it.
Oh, no.
And maybe this is one thing somebody could argue was like a negative aspect of the film in terms of representing, you know, mental illness and mental illness hospital patients. At that time, they're sort of not only otherized, but like...
yeah, they're seen as almost like beyond help. Like, oh, we're just going to put them in this box and...
and crazed and like, yeah, beyond all hope and beyond all help. And that's, I think we can both agree, even though we weren't alive when this was made, but clearly we've made improvements and strides in how we care for people with mental illness. I'd like to think people are not cared for in the way that they're shown in this movie anymore. I don't know that for a fact, but based off of what the movie shows with mental health patients at that time, they were clearly not treated as humanely as I think one would expect or think is right. And knowing that, seeing that, you wouldn't want to put, it's understandable that Chris doesn't want to put her daughter in that. I mean, when Kara sees his mom there, he's sort of alarmed and unsettled. Yeah. So I would probably go the same route that she did. And, you know, at times it's unfortunate in the way, not like, I think Ellen Bernstein does a great job being the mom and her performance is very effective, but it's almost unfortunate that every scene after a certain point, she's just like yelling and screaming.
Yeah. It is like that, like over dramatic.
Yeah.
Almost like old movie, like woman in shock thing, right, where you're just like, oh my God, like you need to like stop screaming and crying. Like, yes, you would be, but like, right, she's just like, oh, and then you're like, okay, like maybe like you'd be shocked, but I don't know if you would, that those noises would come out of your mouth, but okay, sure.
Right.
But you know, it was a different time. So this clearly had an effect on people. I mean, yeah, people were fainting, but I guess it was particularly in that medical scene. Should we dive into that scene for a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, what was your thought on that? And like, at first I did a deep dive on like the procedure and everything, but I was like, are they like prepping her for surgery? I was like, I forgot, does she get surgery in this? But it's not. But what was your like thought on this?
I would say that was like that whole montage, just part of the movie, had no idea that was coming. So that was, again, the scariest part for me. That and when Reagan is possessed and stabbing herself with crucifix, that was really disturbing.
That messed me up. I think that was like the number one scene where I was like, oh no, this is, yeah, I had to look away.
Linda Blair, I don't know what age she was when she was playing this role, but my God, the things she had to do physically and say,
yeah,
wow. I don't know if that's got to have some kind of effect on you.
Yeah, well, okay, a few things. I learned she did win an award for this, Best Actress.
Whoa.
But also they did have, when her voice changes, I think they had another actress
change
her voice. Yeah. And then I think there was like one stunt woman.
It was like a stunt double.
Who did, I think, the more like violent scenes. So that she was, because she was, you know, pretty young. So you're not going to have her stabbing herself. But yeah, I think that was good on their part that they were cognizant of her age. But that's why partially I think it definitely is so disturbing, because you're like, oh my gosh, this is
a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah, yeah, she should not be. It's tough to look at and tough to watch and listen to those moments.
It's a perverse loss of innocence.
Yeah. And it made me happy that she doesn't remember anything at the end. But at the same time, I'm like, that also freaks me out. Like a big gap in memory. I'm like, oh God. But I guess like, but like she still has the wounds, which like, especially like.
Yeah. How as a mom do you explain that to your kid if they've got no recollection?
Well, I think she like understands, like, I think she believes what happened because she probably has this gap in memory. But like. And she has, like, these scars all over her face and, honestly, probably other places on her body, which is, like, that will definitely affect her. I mean, that's, like, that's truly one of the most – if I think about that too much, I, like, get upset. It's, like
– Yeah, same.
Yeah. So – but I also, in my research, was reading that, like, teams of doctors were, like, applauding that medical scene. And they were, like, this is the most accurate, like, depiction of this procedure –
which was going out of style at that point.
Yes. So just for our listeners, and because I did a deep dive, I will let you guys know what I know. This procedure is known as a cerebral angiography or angiography, and it's like used as a way to it was like an imaging technique used to visualize the blood vessels inside the brain. So they would like inject basically a what they call
a dye
or a contrast agent into the veins, and then it would show up on the photographs basically. And so they now do that procedure by injecting I think it's the femoral artery, like in your leg, but or like a different artery, but like pre-70s, like they were using the procedure that you see in the film, which is injecting it directly into the carotid arteries of the neck, which is like, and oh, I was like, wait, God. Is she supposed to be bleeding like that? Like, I was like,
yes,
that like freaked me out so much.
I have a lot of thoughts on this. If I can just get right into it.
Yes, go for it.
So again, had no idea this was coming. There's no music playing in this entire scene. Yeah. That alone, I think, was a smart choice because it really does play out like a regular medical procedure. And that just adds to seriousness. Like, this is so realistic. And that's kind of scary because, you know, we're watching a movie, right? But it feels like you're watching an actual medical procedure.
I noticed that happened a lot in this, just quickly, in this movie, that they left a score or any sort of soundtrack out of a lot of scenes. But I just noticed that this time around.
I think because I was so disturbed during this, I noticed it that much more. Mm-hmm. It was like the absence was astounding, was like so clear. So that adds to the freakiness. It really looked like she was getting injected, and the facial expressions and her, like the physical acting she's doing in this scene alone is really impressive. And like Linda Blair deserved the award she got, probably others if she got them too, because like she really blew me away because I was really convinced they were doing this to her, and it just looked so painful. Yeah. And was there no anesthesia? Like, was that just not something that was either available to most patients or doctors to administer? Like, that was so disturbing to me as well. Just here's some pressure. I'm going to stick a needle inside your neck.
Yeah, maybe it's like, I mean, getting a shot, like you need anesthesia for that. So like, maybe that's kind of what it is. Or they did like shoot her twice, like with injections. So maybe the first one was like a numbing agent in the area. I mean, I don't know. I'm just speculating, but maybe like the first one is like to numb the area, but I don't know if you need anesthesia unless they're like cutting you open or you're like going under, to be cut open. But yeah.
True. I just, again, seeing her face and what they were doing, it was freaking me out.
Yeah.
And then to see her, even from afar, sort of like shake and shudder and squirm in discomfort as they're taking, they're taking x-rays, but, it's like, I don't know what physical pain you're enduring, but what's really scary, I think, at the end of the day about all of this is, like, that was a procedure done on people.
Yeah.
And if it was painful, that's really freaky to comprehend, because now we have things like anesthesia or numbing agents, you name it, to make procedures like not painful at all or like severely less.
I mean, like, yeah, and like the idea that she's like, it's, there's literally blood coming out of her neck versus like, oh, we're gonna do it like in the leg where there's less nerves and you're not gonna feel it, like that. You know, they know more a little bit about what the patient's experience is like, or maybe something that would be less potentially dangerous. So, yeah, that
and
was very jarring. And I had forgotten about that scene. I was like,
I forgot about
the blood like spurting out. Yeah, it's not.
I think that's what I meant sort of earlier, too. It's like these scenes get overplayed, and I get why. They're visually very scary and dramatic, but that scene is, I would argue, equally as disturbing for other reasons, sort of what we just as what we just stated, and it's never mentioned. I never knew about those until I watched this movie.
Me neither.
And to top it all off, I'm sure you know this, but one of the medical personnel in that scene ends up getting convicted
Yes.
For murder.
I read that and I was like, that's a joke. No. No. Like, that's a joke. That is crazy. It was like 3 years after the movie came out or something. But like, yeah, that just blew my mind. I was like, maybe we shouldn't have him like with knives anywhere or like needles and like my children. Or
to be clear, it's the guy telling her to like move on to this bed.
Yeah.
It's not the like, guy actually injecting.
That's like creepy.
I mean, regardless, but it's just like that was really
it's like
freaky.
The idea of a murderer having access to like any medical tools, like.
Well, and apparently the director, when he found out that he was in jail, either waiting a trial for the murder or had already been convicted, interviewed him, and potentially he like either he confessed to more murders or the director asked him about other murders that he was suspected of having committed. And I'm not really sure if he gave a clear yes or no, but that inspired, I think that conversation with the director inspired him to make a movie in 1980 called Cruising, starring Al Pacino. And it's about this string of murders of gay men in New York.
And oh my God, I've never seen that.
I haven't seen it either. But it's very much influenced by this guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, that also leads me to, things that are kind of based on nuggets of real events. The author of, this movie and screenplay and the original novel, was reading an article about some boy that had been, exorcised or had an exorcism performed on him. Mm-hmm. I think it happened in, Missouri. And that, I think, was, the nugget that he used obviously to base this film off of, and he was studying at Georgetown at the time. So all of that sort of weird how all of that comes together. Strange because exorcisms. Especially now, but you don't hear about them. And even in places where you expect to hear about them, the church, you don't because, they're not real. And obviously we've learned more about mental health. So it's less of a thing. So it's a weird thing that this happened when it did, because I feel like if it didn't, it almost would have not been, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like knowing what we all know now, it would have been less of a, big deal to make a movie like this mm-hmm. about an exorcism if we're all kind of that's not real, or people were usually unwell or whatever.
Or if it happened all the time. If it was super common. I think that's part of what makes this movie, especially when it comes out, so effective as well, is this was not talked about, like you said, in the church. And I think if you're not religious, you're not going to know about it. And it even in the movie, they frame it like this is rarely done and it hasn't been done for years, for centuries. So this being a very unknown, unused thing really makes the movie that much more scary and understandably why people flock to see it, because it's like, well, what is an exorcist? Also, it sounds that word, the way you say it, at least in the English language, it's not a soft word.
No, it sounds weird coming out of your mouth and it's just a thing that's not spoken of and there is a lot of mystery surrounding it. Yeah. They obviously used it to its advantage in the film, but the lore around Ouija boards, you're how often do you actually come across one, so that I think just their use of unpopular subject matter definitely worked in their favor. So I want to hear from you, I guess, any other questions or comments also I feel like something we should have mentioned while we were talking about where it was filmed and everything. A lot of the exterior shots obviously were filmed in and around Georgetown, Virginia or Maryland? Virginia.
Virginia.
Georgetown, Virginia. Yeah. It's right outside of Washington, D.C., for those who might not know. And we actually have visited those steps.
We have.
I don't think we went down them, though. We weren't, like, going that way. But we did once upon a time go to Georgetown to visit a friend. And I was just curious. You remember that, right?
Yes. Sorry, I was trying to look up if it's actually in Virginia. I think it is.
I'm going to look it up, but...
Yeah, no, I definitely remember going there. And Georgetown is really cute. I mean, it's very... living in Boston, it you get a lot of colonial, quaint, cute vibes.
It's in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Georgetown is in Washington, D.C., which is interesting.
It's a correction.
Because that's like a city. So it's a city within a city, or a little town within a city.
Yeah. I thought, like, D.C. was its own thing. Anyway.
I did, too. In Googling that, Google has people also ask, do you have to be Catholic to go to Georgetown? I would say probably not. I feel like Georgetown.
Yeah, no.
Georgetown being what it is now, definitely I don't think that's a requirement. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, I remember us going and seeing those steps and knowing those were the steps from the movie and not being that freaked out. And I was sort of waiting for in the movie to be freaked out by those stairs. Mm-hmm. And that really didn't happen until the end.
Yeah, well, they don't show you them for a really long time. And then, yeah, they don't really come into play, like, as impactfully until the very end.
Right.
But I was just curious if that was when, because I know you'd mentioned it, if that was when you had the end of the movie spoiled for you. Like, did one of us say, oh, that's where so-and-so?
I think it was, yeah.
No, well, that's good.
I don't think at that time when we were there, I knew that's what happened. I think I found that out later. And honestly, all I really knew about the ending was just that to save Reagan, Father Karras, you know, basically invites the demon into him and kills himself. But I didn't know how.
So, like, selfless.
I
mean, that's crazy.
It's also,
but
yeah.
I almost got the impression, though, that the demon, like, flung him out the window, you know? Did you get that? Or
I got it as, because you can see his face literally change from being possessed to not. And I took that moment where he's like, no, when he, like, screams that out loud to mean, I'm not going to let you make me kill her and I'm not going to let you win. So I'm going to kill myself so that you get killed too. So that this is over.
Okay.
That's how I read that
I took
scene.
It as... he gets possessed and he's like, no. And then it, like, I did notice the change in his face, but then I felt like, oh, it's the demon just, like, latent inside of him. Mm. And it makes him, like, jump out the window. Mm. So interesting ways to read that.
And it's also kind of sad because at the end when the other father is with him, he's like clearly still alive but barely.
Oh my god, that I forgot about too. Yeah. I was like, oh man. I want to hear other, like, questions that you had, anything that was, like, confusing or just, like, things you want to comment on.
So speaking of the ending, I am confused a little bit about Father Marin. He, at one point, when they've done sort of, like, the main exorcist part, and they, like, are taking a break, taking a five.
Yeah.
Like, March Madness is upon us, and it kind of reminded me of, like, a quarter or a period in a basketball game, where it's like, all right, we've done 20 minutes of this, take a little break. Anyway.
Cool, it's halftime. Yeah.
Rest up, hydrate. Right when they're about to go back in, at some point, Marin goes into the bathroom and it looks like he's taking a pill from that, you know, artifact he found from the beginning of the movie, Northern Iraq. And then a couple scenes later, he's dead when Father Karras comes back in. I'm confused because in reading up about the movie after, it seems like the Father Marin had a heart attack. But seeing that scene where he takes a pill, was he sort of causing his own death? Or did Reagan kill him? I'm just unclear how he dies and if that was something he wanted like was expecting, or if it happens accidentally or intentionally by Reagan or some other force.
So I don't know 100%. I read it as, so he, after he actually finds the artifact in Iraq, then there's like a scene where he's sitting at a cafe and he takes a pill there. And I was just under the impression that he's under like this heart or some kind of medication.
And they kept
mentioning that he was really old. And I was like, okay, he's under like some medication.
Wait, sorry. I don't think we watched the same version. That was not in my version.
Oh.
Yeah. Wait, no, you're right. I'm so sorry. I forgot that part. Oh. Never mind.
I was like, how many versions of this are there? Is this Justice League again?
I know. There's a 4-hour extended director's cut of The Exorcist.
Of The Exorcist. That would be better than Justice League, either of them, probably.
So sorry, continue. But you're right. Yes, that is sort of hinted at in the beginning. You're right. So maybe it was just because he's like, I know I'm about to do this again. I need to like be ready for it.
Yeah, I was just, they just kept mentioning how old he was and that, and then in that scene, he clearly looks worn down. I think he's just taking the medicine just because he knows he needs to take it. It was a little ambiguous whether or not the demon inside Reagan kills him or he just collapses of his own accord. Mm. So that was a little ambiguous, but I guess it kind of makes sense that he has a heart attack. I mean, it's a very like intense, like thing that he's doing.
The power of Christ compels
you. So yeah, so like you have to kind of really be doing that with your whole heart, and has clearly has been weakened for many years. So, but I don't think I think the artifact, that was actually a thing that I didn't figure out, and I had a question on like. I don't think he's taking pills out of the artifact. I think the artifact is like a separate thing. And then it ends up like on the stairs for some reason.
There's two.
At the bottom of the stairs?
Yeah.
I thought it would be the same one. I was like, oh, is it the same thing?
I'm thinking of the locket, basically. That's what it is. Because he opens up that silver.
Oh, it's like a little box. Yeah.
It's like a circular locket that at the end of the movie... one of the fathers gives to, or no, Chris at the end of the movie gives it to Father, I forget his name, but the other priest, right?
Father Dyer or something. Yeah.
She gives it to him.
So,
but then the.
I thought that the locket was separate from like his box of pills though, or were they inside?
I think he put the pills inside the locket.
I need to go back and. Inside the locket? I didn't think it was a locket though. Maybe I'm like...
maybe I'm misremembering, but I thought I saw him open it up, take something. And in that moment, I'm like, are you trying to kill yourself? Because you know you can't exorcise this demon out of her. And so you're just... you need to try valiantly and... or I actually thought... even though I sort of, again, knew the ending, I, for a moment, thought he was going to take on the demon. And then with taking this pill that I thought was sort of like a... you know, a final pill, for lack of a better expression, I thought that was what was going to happen. It's like, he knows he's going to die, so let me take on this demon, and then it will be over.
Yeah. I mean, it makes for a better ending the way that it happens, but I kind of thought, I felt bad that, obviously, Father Karras didn't make it, because I was like, I felt like he and Chris could have, like, been a cute couple. Not that everyone needs to end up with everybody. She's clearly a very strong... independent, successful woman.
My daughter's
Which I really liked,
demonic,
by the way.
My daughter's demonic.
like, savior.
My daughter.
I don't know. I was like, she seemed like to notice him just on the street and then like was asking about him. And then, I don't know. So I was like, they could be like cute.
Can you imagine that at dinner parties? It's like, how'd you two meet? Oh, he did the exorcist on my daughter.
Yeah. And then I was like, how would that, I literally, my mind was like, okay, if he becomes her step, or if he would become her stepdad, like, how would you like have those conversations? Like, yeah, like when I was like performing the exorcism, like, just so weird.
Oh man.
But yeah, I felt bad that he didn't make it.
Me too.
Father Karras.
I was, Yeah. But I guess it's sort of a foreshadowing when at the beginning when he's like, I feel like I've lost my faith.
I guess in a weird way, this whole process like restores it in him at the very last minute almost.
Yeah.
Because of the power of, you know, in this movie, because of the power of God, this demon is then expelled and this young girl is saved. So I think that does kind of restore his faith a little bit.
I would agree with that.
At the very end. Because also at the end, you know, like you just mentioned, the Father Dyer comes to him and asks if he, I forget what it is exactly, but basically if you're not religious or if you don't have faith, you wouldn't sort of want like a last, I forget what the word is, but basically a last like prayer type thing or a last blessing.
Doesn't he read him his rights, sort of?
What? Or
doesn't Father Dyer right at the end at the bottom of the stairs, doesn't he read Father Karras' rights or something? He like says a prayer.
Is that what it's called? Yeah.
He says a prayer
And Father Karras clearly is like conscious enough to like motion that he wants that.
Yeah.
So I think that also just speaks to his faith being restored.
Yeah. It's clear to us that Reagan, as she's being possessed, kills Dennings.
Yes.
Like
who was like really weird anyway. I don't know if I liked him.
And we think that the events went this way, that when he was there for the 20 minutes he was, somehow Reagan gets a hold of him literally and kills him by twisting his head around and then throwing him out the window, and then he falls down the stairs and then he's found.
Or just thinking of this, because I think so while the demon is inside Reagan, it turns her head completely around, I think a few times.
Yes.
So, or the demon, like he's checking on her or something, or the demon
entered him,
throws itself out of Reagan into him, twists his head around, and that's why I thought that Father Karras had the demon fling himself out the window, because I thought that the demon did the same thing for Dennings. I thought that the demon like flung himself inside Dennings out of the window, and then he left Dennings and went back into Reagan. This demon's doing a lot of traveling.
I get that, but if the ending is to be read as by killing oneself, you kill the demon, then I don't think that would hold up. Because if Dennings died being possessed, then Reagan theoretically would have never stayed possessed.
That's true. I still feel like the demon is like out there, but I guess the idea that like it would leave Father Karras and then not immediately go back into Reagan because both priests are dead, like... But I don't know. There's a little bit of holes.
I'm sure there's a ton of Reddit forums we could like do a deep dive on.
Yeah.
Explaining why. And I wonder if the book too, which I'm now interested in reading, a friend of mine, when I told her I was going to be watching this for the first time, she's like, oh, it's really good, but the book is even better. So I'm sort of tempted to read this book now.
Yeah, absolutely. I did just want to quickly, while we're talking about the demon, like kind of go into sort of the history of it and in the demon that is shown, not necessarily the one inside Reagan, but the like statues and the like talismans that Father Marin like interacts with, because that is actually like a real demon or like a real like thing based in history. The demon is called Pazuzu. And
that name is kind of funny.
Yeah, I know. This demon was actually like the king of demons in like ancient Mesopotamia. And it was like they say it was the bringer of winds from the southwest and drought, plagues and storms. And he has the body of a man, the head of a dog or lion, talons of an eagle, wings, the tail of a scorpion, and a penis that's a serpent. And it's weird because in reality, when this demon was like drawn on things or used on necklaces or things, he was actually, even though he was the king of demons, he was actually supposed to ward off all the other demons. So he was actually kind of a protector. And in particular, they mentioned in my readings, they mentioned that he was particularly at odds with this one demon called Lamashtu, who is said to attack mothers and children, which I was like, oh, that's interesting because this demon attacks like this child and her mother.
Right.
And like, I was just, it was interesting that Peter Blatty decided to use this demon as the demon that attacks them when like this other demon clearly was like the attacker of mothers and children. So I don't know, but that I just thought was really interesting because I don't know, who doesn't want to know more about demons, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
That's very interesting though. Thank you for that background. Also noted, I don't know if you've seen the original Halloween movie.
Maybe. What's
if you haven't?
I don't think so.
If you haven't seen the original Halloween, we're definitely putting that on our list.
Okay, I don't think so. Maybe I have and like, or was like, oh, this is too scary. Maybe I stopped watching it. I didn't watch it on my own. I feel like if I did, it was with a group.
It's so about,
I can't quite remember.
It stars a very young and wonderful Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode.
Oh, I don't think I've seen Halloween then.
We're okay. Watching that. We're talking okay. About that for sure.
Okay.
I mentioned that movie though because the theme song in that movie is very similar, I thought, to the theme song in this movie.
Mm. The like weird screeching violins. Or no.
I think it's done on a piano, but just similar melody for both, I thought. And you know, Halloween comes out in 79, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe it comes out sooner. But this movie comes out in 73, so they're not too far apart, but they did ring familiar to me. Or this did ring familiar to me, I found.
That's interesting. I almost can't even remember, like, any tunes from this. Because, like you were saying, like, the silence is just so
yes,
impactful throughout this that I feel like anything else that was happening when music was going on, it almost felt like not as important, or I don't know, maybe I just was, it just wasn't as catchy, or maybe I just was more drawn in the silent scenes.
I would agree with that. And I think too, if I remember correctly, there's only two scenes where it plays right at some point in like the first 30 minutes. And then at the end, right at the end, it plays.
Okay.
So it's not throughout, whereas like the Halloween theme is much more, you know, placed, interspersed between the movie. And like that theme has sort of taken on a life of its own. So that's much more well known and heard of than I think this theme.
Huh. I wonder if I know it, but we'll have to see when we definitely watch that.
Yes. You know, I know last week we talked about Milk and how we both really liked that, but that is a longer movie. I noticed this movie is even longer than that. And this flew by. This really...
Wait, this is longer than Milk?
Milk was 2 hours, 8 minutes, and this is 2 hours, 12 minutes.
No way. Milk is at least 3 hours.
Oh, no. Milk is 2 hours.
Wait, are you sure? Wait, I'm sorry.
What version did you watch?
I swear to God, Milk was so long.
It was long, but I think that's just due to pacing.
Okay, yeah, because I'm blown away at that fact. Like, I felt like Milk... Again, we talked about it, but the beginning for me dragged. So I am astounded to hear that this movie is longer. This is weirdly very quick, but each scene is given its due and each scene, you know, takes its time, but it doesn't feel like a slow movie. Even in the beginning before, you know, a lot of the possession happens. So that's really interesting. I guess just a lesson in editing and pacing there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much to touch on in this, but I'm just glad that you've seen it. I really did like it on second watch as well. And I I wanted to watch it again, even to just get more sort of engrossed in the story. Because I do think that there are a lot of great characters in this. And like we were saying before, like the backstory with Dimi and his mom, but also the fact that they made him like a boxer. And mm-hmm. I think something that we maybe mentioned a little bit, but something that I really loved is that this like centers around, you know, this woman and her daughter. And, you know, Chris is basically like an independent single mom who's financially stable enough to like, you know, have her, you know, rent this house out while she's filming on location. She's obviously a very successful like TV or movie star. I mean, and loves her daughter. And I don't know. I feel like that was like a unique, like choice of character. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe it's told differently in the book, but I was like, oh, like go Chris. She's kind of, you know, doing very well for herself. So I like that. And she's like, you know, also no nonsense and like, you know, in protecting her daughter and everything. So that was just something that I wanted to mention that I don't think we touched on a lot. I really think Chris is a little bit like an unsung hero in this movie, and I kind of love her for it.
I would agree with that. I think that's a really good point. I think it's, again, easy to get caught up in the horror of what's happening to Reagan and how Father Marin and Karras, you know, try to rid her of the demonic possession that's taken hold of her. That, yeah, it's like throughout three-fourths of the movie, it's the mom trying to get her well again. It's really just at the end that like these two guys come in, and I shouldn't say two guys, but you know, the two fathers come in and, you know, effectively save the day. But like the mom does a lot of the work and then is the one that's pushing for this to happen. Even Father Karras is like, it's rare. Like, I need approval. I need to have proof that she is like eligible. So I think you're right. I think she pulls the movie through and is sort of overlooked.
Yeah. And they sort of like take her out of it after a certain point, mm-hmm. but she does really carry it for most of the like three quarters of the film. And I think she's like an underrated character.
I would agree.
Especially within like the horror genre.
Yeah. She's not a final girl. Like I know I've mentioned in a previous episode, but she's a strong female character.
It's like, oh my God. Yeah.
That's high praise.
Oh, this is what you need to see.
National Treasure.
National Treasure. It's crazy to me that you haven't.
I actually did think of one more question.
Okay. Yeah.
And maybe we can't answer it, but I say, why not? Let's just try to spitball here. Is it supposed to be obvious why Reagan gets possessed, or is that supposed to be part of what's scary? It's like you just don't know. She's just one day under this influence, her body has been possessed by this demon, and we have no idea how and why it just happened.
Yeah, I don't think there was any evidence in my experience watching it in that, you know, the demon chose her for a certain reason or whatnot. I think that might also be part of, at least what makes it on the scarier side for me is that it's sort of like, oh, it's sort of random.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what brought the demon here or what awoke it or anything, but it is strange. So,
and I was,
I don't know if there's a real answer there. Maybe we get an answer in the book. I'm not sure.
Right. And I was thinking while watching, you know, is there going to be some kind of connection between what Father Marin saw in Iraq with what's happening with Reagan? And there is, in that clearly I from what I sort of deduced and then was confirmed when I read up after I saw the movie, Father Marin knows that there's going to be sort of this face off between him and this demon, Pazuzu.
Yeah, well, the demon seems like it knows him. It's like, Marin, right. Marin.
But then it's like,
and like, it happens before he gets there.
Right. So that's the connection, because then he's the one that ultimately does face it, even though Father Karras is the one that ends up defeating it. But it's the Reagan part that is not connected to. Mm. And I guess
right.
it doesn't need to be, because I would argue that is what makes this movie effectively scary, or part of it effectively scary, is that there's just this innocent 12-year-old girl who gets possessed by this demon, who has had no relation to Father Marin or Father Karras. They don't mm-hmm. strike me as a religious family. So maybe that is intentionally meant to be ambiguous.
Yeah, it might be. I feel like maybe reading the book will reveal that, or not. Maybe we'll just have to see. Maybe that question is answered in future movies, but not sure.
All right, so I think it's safe to say that wraps up our conversation on The Exorcist. I would highly recommend this movie to our listeners. It is scary, but it is good. It's really good.
Yes.
Next yes. time, we're going to be...
Well, but not that scary, but yes, it is scary.
Exactly.
Ish. It's more disturbing, but anyway.
Next time, we're going to be talking about The Godfather Part 2 and why Haley hasn't seen that, which is absolutely nuts.
I know, it's crazy, and we'll get into it next week. It's like, how do I not know? It's practically my blood. So exactly. It's shameful that I haven't seen that up until this point.
We may or may not have a special guest with us, but stay tuned for that. It's going to be a goodie.
Yes. Either way, it will be a goodie. We are really excited. Mm-hmm. And on a slightly more somber note, you know, with everything going on with the crimes against Asian Americans, you know, on the rise, and everything that happened with the shooting in Atlanta, we will be providing links in the caption of this episode and our previous episode to, you know, help stop Asian hate, you know, places where you guys can donate to certain causes down there. And, you know, across the country. So we will be providing those for you guys in the Instagram post caption below the description of the episode.
And our deepest condolences to the families of those that were killed. There's no place for that. There's no place for any kind of hate against any one group of any kind.
And I know that we both don't stand for that. So we will, you know, even though this isn't, you know, a political podcast or any sort of podcast where we talk about social issues like that on the regular, we will, you know, be trying to do what we can with the small platform that we have. So with that, I, you know, want to just say thank you guys so much for listening. Please follow us on our Instagram at SeenThatPod, and that is where you can get those links to help stop Asian hate. You can keep listening to us on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts, and please follow us on those platforms as well so you get notified every time there's a new Seen That episode. Remember, we are all in this together. Stay safe, keep wearing your masks. Enjoy the spring weather. Try to get vaccinated if you can.
Pre-register.
Pre-register, whatever you can do so that you can, like, have a fun summer. Who wouldn't want that? I love you guys, and I love Avril.
I love Haley. I love you all. I love you, Miles.
He's somewhere.
Until next time, everybody. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Father Karras and like they're
it's Karras, by the way, sorry
Karras. I've been saying carcass, my god.